Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to turn it over to Gisela to do the roll call, or Glenn, or whoever's got that.
Thank you. I'll do it. It's Gisela. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone on today's call. We have Jeff Newman, Gabriel Pinheiro, James Bledel, Alan Greenberg, Paul Diaz. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, Glenn de Saint-Géry, myself, Gisela Gruber-White, and we have apologies from Zbigniew Lobel. If I could just remind everyone, please, to state their names as well when speaking. And David Maher has just joined the call now as well. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. This is Jeff Newman, the chair of the PPP work team. It is October 1st, 2009. There's a lot of noise on the call. It's the first official day of the rest of ICANN's life, being a free entity. I want to offer my congratulations on that. And so I believe, is this the first recording of under the new ICANN, or has there been another work team call?
My first.
I think this is the first. Anyway, welcome, everyone, to the call. And just as a reminder, we're going to be having weekly calls this week, or one call per week this week, next week, and the following week. And then we're all going to meet in Seoul.
Will there really be people available the following week?
That will be the 15th, October
15th. Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking one line off the calendar.
Right. So it's the 1st, the 8th, and the 15th. Today what we're going to do is we're going to go over, for the first half of the call, we're going to go out over the survey that most or many of the people on this call have actually have filled out, and go over those results. That's on the stage two. And then we're going to spend the second half of the call going back to stage three discussion. So with that said, is there any other questions? The goal of going over the survey is to give us more information so that we can go back and write the draft document, the text that goes around stage two. So by the meeting in Seoul, we'll have a document on stage one, stage two, and hopefully at least survey results on stage three, which should take us halfway through the six stages for our work. So we are making progress. I know we've been together a long time, but we are making some progress slowly but surely. I think these topics are not very easy. They're not. They require a bunch of abstract thinking and hypothetical situations of what could be the policy development process, or what could be the different policies going through in the next several years, and how, applying those to getting a good process down. Was there any other any questions on the agenda and any other items that anyone want to add? Okay, so with that, Marika has posted the survey results from the nine people that filled them out, and we can start going over some of the questions. I think to the extent we can, Marika, if we could try to keep it, I know there's a lot of questions, so try to keep it, if we can keep it to 45 minutes. I'll ask for comments after each question and kind of keep an eye on the time.
So you want me to run through different questions?
You know what, I could start, and then maybe if you want to add anything to the, if you summarize the comment. So all the comments, I'm sorry, let me ask a question I probably should have asked before. All the comments that are written in the responses, they're the full comments, they're not reworded, they're exactly what people wrote?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
So if I can just make one comment, compared to the previous survey, it's a bit disappointing to see that, you know, very grateful all the people that have submitted comments, but most of the ones that provided their input are the ones that also participated on the call. So the group might want to consider how to get input from those that, you know, are members of the working group but have not provided their input on this particular stage. Because I think on the previous round, I think we had 15 people participating. And now we only had nine, which of course is a pity. If, you know, we really want to get broad input at this stage.
Okay, I agree with that. And Marika, is the survey still open in theory for people to go in and fill it out?
Yes, I haven't closed it, so I presume people can still go in and we can provide an update on the results if people still want to complete it.
Yeah, so I think there's a few people that are on this call, actually, that have not completed the survey. There's probably at least three or four people on this call that haven't done it yet. So if you can, please go in. Try not to be influenced by, or maybe you want to be influenced by the discussion today, but we really want your candid thinking, even if it goes against, even if there's a question that here that 8 of the 9 people voted in one way, please not be swayed necessarily by that and kind of apply your own independent judgment to the question. So why don't we do that? We'll keep it open for another week or so, and hopefully send an email out to some of the members of the work team that are not on the call, and maybe, Marika, you and I can talk afterwards as to who those people are so we can send them maybe some targeted email in case they, have a lot on their plate and are not really reading the full work team emails.
Okay.
So the first question on the first few questions deal with how to maintain flexibility on launching a PDP process. And the first question was, within which time frame should the council decide whether to initiate a PDP or not? Should the same time frame apply for an issue raised by the board? If there's a theme in these, I think most people have the opinion that there should be some flexibility for the council. And I think some people have responded a certain amount of days. Marika, does these numbers, the responses, correspond to the people, or were they randomized? So, like the people listed in name affiliation.
I think it does follow if there are 9 comments, but in those questions where there are less, it's only from those who have responded. So then there's no order. I think I would need to double check, and I'm not 100% sure, but I think when there are 9 answers, it follows the list of responses, but if they're less than 9, it's impossible to say. I mean, of course, I could look back if there's real interest to know who said what, but it's more difficult to deduct it from that.
Okay. So, I think most of the people have said there should be some flexibility, but the number of people, and a lot of people some people have said 15 days is clearly too short. Some people have put in a definitive time frame saying that 45 days, or some have said 60, some have said 90. No one has said greater than 90, although some people have actually not put in a time frame. So I'll open up this question to anyone on the call, especially, I guess, some that answered the survey that didn't put in a time frame. Is there a drop-dead date where you think that either there should be some motion by the council or some decision point by the council, or it should be dropped? Right, some have termed it in terms of meetings, some have termed it in terms of days. So, James?
It looked like you've already called that out, but my response was, rather than counting in terms of dates, we count in terms of how many, I'll put a limit on how many GNSO meetings can occur where the issue is deferred before it has to come up for a vote. I think I limited that to 2, and then 3 if there's an actual ICANN meeting in the interim.
Okay, Alan.
I'm uncomfortable with the time if there is something going on. If the council decides it needs to do some additional work first before it can vote or to accept or reject, then I don't have a great problem with it. I do have a problem with it being deferred from meeting to meeting without some rational process going on at the time. I don't think it should just expire because they didn't vote. I think it ultimately has to be voted up or down.
Right. At that point, it becomes like a pocket veto.
Yeah, that was James in the last comment.
Sorry, that was James.
That's all right. Paul?
Yeah, I would say I agree with both James and Alan. And to Alan's point, I would just add that the council, if they're going to defer, that there should be an explicit reason made why, so that you don't run into a pocket veto situation. If somebody's trying to put off the vote for whatever reason, I think they should have to be explicit as to why. What is the issue that they're grappling with? Why do they need more time?
Okay, so what if, so in taking those points and taking James's comments of, you know, would it be a recommendation of this group, could we say that it should be voted on within two GNSF council meetings, unless there's an intervening ICANN meeting, in which case it could be three? And if not voted within three meetings, there needs to be explicitly stated reason why it was not voted within those two or three meetings. And sorry, Paul, you said, try to just see if I can word that. What you were saying was that the reason should include something like, you know, they need, or what the issues are that they're still grappling with as to why they couldn't have decided it within those three meetings.
Yeah, not to be overly parochial, but using the example here in the States, a senator can put a hold on a measure, and the senators do not, U.S. senator does not have to even identify themselves. I think to avoid the potential of a pocket veto, let's not give the council so much leeway. Rather, whomever needs the time must explicitly say, I need it for whatever their reason is.
So it needs to be made upon a motion of someone on the council to defer with the stated reason, and maybe even a pathway forward or a resolution path forward, so timelines forward, so they can't just indefinitely say, I want it deferred because I don't have enough information on this issue. They would have to provide a clear path forward as to when it could be decided or how they would get to that point.
And Jeff, it's Mike Rodenbaugh.
And Alan.
Okay, so let me go to Mike first and then to Alan.
Yeah, it's on this point, obviously. So on council right now, we have, I don't know if it's a rule, it's not really a written rule anywhere, but it's certainly a rule that we all abide by, which is that if any councilor or any constituency wants to defer any vote, they can do so for one meeting, for any reason or no reason, basically. But, you know, it typically one constituency will say, I haven't had time to address this in my constituency yet, and so it can be put off for one vote, but no longer. So that's a possible, we could possibly write that into the rules.
Okay, let me go to Alan and anyone else that wants to, it looks like Paul agrees with that, with what Mike just said. Alan?
Yeah, the current rule is, as Mike says, although I'm not quite sure if the next meeting a different constituency says something, could we defer another meeting at that for that reason? I don't think the situation has come up recently. Pragmatically, however, if I look at the last PDP that we approved on post-expiration, I think that was the last one, it was deferred at least once because constituencies weren't ready. It was deferred another time because we ran out of time at the meeting. And other PDPs in the past, the council has decided that some active work had to be done, which might have taken several months. So I think we need to be flexible. I think as Mike pointed out, the current practice is we don't need a vote on it. Obviously, we could have a vote on deferring. That might, you know, I don't know how a vote on deferring would work, because then some constituencies could override the one that says they don't, they're not prepared.
Yeah, I mean, I think we just would allow it to be deferred for one meeting for the reason of you know, needing more time, basically, but no more than that. And you can't pile on and have, you know, the business constituency do it once and then the IPC do it the next time.
Trade back and forth.
Right.
But I think that deferring for cause, and whether cause is
you ran out of time at the meeting, which does happen on occasion, or the group has decided to take some action other than a vote, I think you need to allow that.
Okay.
Now, my recollection is we've had situations in the last year or two where there was very significant time taken between the issues report coming in and the council vote because of the need to investigate something or other.
So what I'm hearing essentially, and then I'll go to Marika, is that pretty much as of right, anyone, any councillor could ask for a vote to be deferred. So the issue should be brought up within the first meeting. Any councillor could ask for it to be deferred for one meeting, with or without any reason, and without a vote. But at the second meeting, it sounds like if it's not up upon motion by a councillor, they need to state a good reason or a reason, and then that should be voted on by the council. Is that kind of what you're saying, Alan?
I wouldn't have said a reason. I would have said action.
Okay, so it has to have, well, has to have a reason and an action or.
Well, yes. I mean, you want to understand the methodology by which sometime you're going to have it be in a position to vote. So it's either seeking more information, or, you know, I'm not sure how you categorize running out of time at a meeting, but.
I don't think that should ever be an issue. I think a PDP should. Well, I don't think we should take consideration of that. I think the council needs to figure out, you know, how to adjust its own schedule to make sure that those things where there are rigid rules should find a way to fit that in.
Well,
that is up to
and indeed, the last time that happened, the next meeting it went on the agenda at the beginning, but
right.
It did happen, despite our best intentions that it would not.
Okay, let me go to Marika and James.
Yeah, this is Marika, because I just want to clarify. So I think I'm hearing indeed two things. One is indeed the request just for a deferral, needing more time to review it. And a second action will be more if the council decides that more needs to be done, which, and then I would presume would have the form of a formal motion identifying what needs to be done, how much time that would take, and expected delivery of results of that additional research or answers to questions or whatever is required. So we're talking about two different tracks for possible deferral or delay of a vote. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay.
James?
Hi, Jeff. Real quickly, I have two points or questions, and I'm not sure if they're maybe just related to this issue, but I don't want to take us off track, but one question is, if we go too in-depth here in terms of setting time frames and limits, do we run the risk of stepping outside of what we're supposed to be doing with the PDP and stepping into a little bit how the council operates and governs itself? And I just, if the councilors on the call think that there's no danger in that or that's what we're supposed to be doing, then I'll drop the issue, but I just wanted to point that out. And then the second thing was just a thought that if we are setting maximum time limits before something can be voted, in the interest of balance, it seems like if we're going to put that constraint onto the council, then there should be some sort of corresponding constraint over, wanted to say, how many, I'm trying to think of the other side of this, where you couldn't overwhelm the council with issues reports in an attempt to gain this a little bit and have someone violate that. And I was thinking that if, for example, if an issue is rejected, how long must it stay dormant before it could be raised again, or how many issues can be submitted by a particular individual or constituency in a given time, or do we even want to look at those issues just to balance out any limitations we're putting on council?
Let's start with the first question, and Marika, is that the one you wanted to address? Or you have your hand up. I don't know if it's...
Sorry, I still have my hand up, but James did raise an interesting question that I don't think we've addressed before on what if an issue gets voted down should there be any limitations on when it gets brought back again? And it's something maybe the group at some point needs to consider. But I'll take my hand down now.
Okay. I want to put that issue to the side because I think we could get bogged down in that, and maybe that's one of our come back to. What I want to address first is James' question of, is there any other group? Are we stepping into the council matters? I think, and maybe some counselors can step in if they disagree, but I think that that is one of the things in our mandate. I don't think any other work team has got that on their plate. We are supposed to be deciding time frames as to how long a PDP should take, and this is one necessary step within the PDP. We can go back, and maybe Marika can talk to Ken to see if anyone on the operations side has looked at this yet. But I think absent that, I think we're okay in making this recommendation.
It's
okay,
I think it's right in the middle of our plate.
Okay.
And it wasn't that in particular. It's if we start putting rules about, you know, how they manage their agenda from meeting to meeting and how things are carried over. Just that was the issue.
Well, right. Just remember, James.
It could be PDP. It could be anything.
These are only recommendations that this work team is making up to a steering committee, which then has to be approved by the council. So I don't think we should worry too much about that at this point.
And just add, in the end, I think this would go into the rules of operation, which in theory could be changed by the council at any time. I'm not sure. Well, actually, I shouldn't have presupposed that. Maybe it is something that's formalized in the bylaws, but I guess we need to talk about that later. Push that to the side, too. Alan?
Yeah, I think if we start worrying about what happens if the agenda runs out without completing everything, which happens in every board meeting and every other large meeting that I've ever participated in my life, I think that goes into the rules of operation. You know, if something essential is missed, do they have to schedule another meeting within 7 days or whatever, you know, an extraordinary meeting? That's under rules of operation of the council, and I think that's outside of our bounds. It's going to happen. We know it's going to happen. If they choose to consider it, fine. If they don't, that's fine also.
Okay,
thanks.
Let's jump to the next question, which was basically what other flexibility, which is a pretty open question, what other flexibility would be desired with launching a PDP? And we had a number of comments from categorizing reasons for PDP initiation, which I think would be in the issues, or should be in the issues report. If anyone's got any comments, just jump in. I'm going to go over the answers here. Ability for council to request additional data, seek the advice of other SOs, ACs, commission reports from subject matter experts, and open the proposed PDP for public comment. So what are some thoughts on that one? This is when the issues report is now final, and presumably we did have a recommendation in stage one that an issues report should go out for comment and should reflect those comments, that there was the option after the issues report was drafted for the council to recommend more or subject matter experts or more information. But I think that's reflected. The third comment was the requester should present as much information as possible. Try to justify why the issue needs a PDP. I'm jumping back and forth here. If anyone wants to jump in on any of these comments, if you wrote them, you want to go into more detail?
I'm not, it's Alan, I'm not sure what three means because the requester requests the issues report but doesn't participate explicitly in the process after that, other than perhaps as one of the voices in council.
The council needs to be sensitive to existing workload on community and take into consideration before approving new PDPs. Not sure who responded to that, but hearing silence, we'll just take that as a comment.
Jeff, did you not hear my last comment, or am I on mute?
No, I heard it.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Well, right, so I was waiting. There's no one on the person who gave that answer is either not on this call or
okay.
Not providing.
Sorry, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't muted.
No, you were fine. I was kind of hoping someone would raise their hand and jump in if they made that comment, but seeing none, I'm just going to go on to the next one, which says that there may be times when issued reports require something be handled or responded to as it is recognized as a time-critical issue and thus needs a shorter time frame and higher priority. I'm going to take that comment, and we'll discuss that, I think, in a later question, which talks about kind of the emergency situation or a faster time track. So I'm not ignoring that comment, but I think it's important, but we address it later. Let's see. Sorry, my phone is actually ringing. I turned it off. Which doesn't help. Again, we have an expedited exceptional circumstances. Before taking a decision, counsel should be given flexibility to request more detailed information, which we have. And then there may be cases where issues report identifies that more information is needed. Okay. So I think the common themes in there are prioritization of counsel work, maybe moving things up in priority, and requesting the ability to request additional information if counselors are not ready to approve a formal PDP at that point. And then we have the additional comments, which the two additional comments are very important to have a fixed time frame, otherwise the process can be delayed, and counsel must not be put in a position of rushing a PDP without a narrowly defined scope and a concise quantification of the harm to registrants, community, DNS. Any shortcuts taken during this process will impede or even invalidate the work of a subsequent PDP.
Jeff, it's Alan. I think the comment on fixed timelines in the additional comments and the end of mine on regular on targets and regular reports is important. Some of these additional processes may take a long time, but I think they can't be forgotten. So we need reasonable timelines and in parallel with that, regular reports.
Okay, that was Alan.
Yep.
Okay. Let me go on to the next topic. And like I said, if anyone's got any questions, raise your hand or speak up. This is the appeals mechanism. These are questions about the appeal mechanism. And the first one is, should an appeals mechanism be developed in case GNSS decides not to initiate a PDP on an issue raised by another SO or AC? And I think we're kind of split here. So there's really no consensus here. I will note that one person, or there's one more person that says no, that says yes, but two say there's no strong view. Not sure what to take from this, and maybe some people that voted in either direction can speak up. I think I was one. I'll speak up. I was one who voted no, and I'll just give the reason why I voted no, which was essentially because GNSO is tasked with dealing with certain things. An SO can deal with an issue and send it to the board.
Exactly.
And they have their own mechanism to deal with that. I'm not sure what the at-large can do directly, so maybe someone can educate me. But if it's an SO, they have their own process, and the GNSO doesn't really need to be involved unless the SO is trying to make some policy that affects people within or entities within the GNSO. So, Alan, you got your hand raised, so maybe you can help me answer that question.
Well, in answer to the question, an AC is an advisory committee to the board, so we always have the option of a pass to the board, although in honesty I'm not quite sure how that's different from anyone else writing a letter to the board, given that at the moment the board doesn't necessarily respond. If you look at the rationales for the three yeses, they're all really, unless I'm misreading them, that you can appeal to the board, you can appeal to the ombudsman. And my answer, which is the third one, is if there's a substantive reason, that is the issues report failed in some reason,
we've already said in an earlier stage there should be a mechanism to get the issues report fixed before it comes to council for the final vote. And subject to that, it's appeal through the board or some other mechanism that's outside of our jurisdiction. So I think we're all agreeing. Even though the numbers, people voted yes and no, I think the rationale seems to be the same for some of them. No one is saying there should be an appeal within council other than my comment on making sure the issues report is on target.
I think that's a good observation. Is there anyone else that voted yes that disagrees with Alan's assessment? Or how about people that maybe voted with no strong view? Have any of these discussions persuaded you to have a stronger view in one way or the other? Okay, then Marika, what I think, what I'm hearing, at least from Alan, voted yes, and in reading those comments, I think Alan's interpretation is right. I think we should have a recommendation that the group, obviously the group's going to get to comment on this, but at least in the first draft, to have a recommendation that the group does not believe that there should be an appeals mechanism, a formal appeals mechanism to appeal a decision of the council not to initiate a PDP, with the caveat that if a PDP is voted against because it needs more information, or that, you know, there's just not enough to go on, that's not really an appeal. That's more of a let's fix the issues report and bring it back up for a vote.
I think when we were talking about issues report, we included that stage of a preliminary version coming out, which could be commented on. I think. I don't remember for sure.
Yeah, I believe we did. And if not, we'll certainly go back and make sure it does contain that. Additional comments. Let's see. Council should not reject out of hand, but give guidance. If there could be a revised proposal, that would be successful. But I think that's kind of in line with what we were talking about, basically saying that, look, if it's voted down, there should be a reason that's why it's voted down. And it's acceptable for a reason to be we just didn't want to do a PDP on it. You don't have to explain how it could be cured. I don't think – well, let me ask that question. I read that comment in two different ways, actually. You could read that comment as saying – council should never just vote no. They should always give a reason as to how you can get to yes. Or you can read that comment as you just need to provide a reason, whatever that reason is.
I'm not sure I understand the concept of council providing a reason when the council vote is made up of independent votes.
So in other words, I guess people who vote no should provide a reason, I guess, is what they're trying to say. Or constituencies that vote no, or stakeholder groups that vote no.
I'm not sure I support that, but...
And why is that, Alan?
I guess it's pretty counter to, in general, how we do things. That councillors either vote as they're instructed by their constituency, which may be for sound rational reasons or maybe emotion. We don't have control over that. Or in some cases, councillors are free to vote as their heart desires, as it were. And I'm not sure we demand a reason for abstentions. I'm not sure we want to go into the business of demanding a reason for a no, but that's a major issue. That's wider than just PDPs, I think.
So let me just play devil's advocate for a second, and if anyone wants to jump in, please. We do require, or at least the bylaws have required, if the board votes down something that's passed from the GNSO to the board, we require them to state a reason.
Isn't that only if there's a supermajority, or is that in all cases?
That's a good question. Not sure the answer to that.
I don't know that it's ever happened anyway, but...
I thought they had to give a reason if they send it back to council, but not if they just reject. But we can check that easily enough.
I don't think they've ever formally rejected anything the council's done, at least not in the last 3 or 4 years.
They've ignored.
We'll strike that from the record. Okay, well, so let me go on to some other questions or some other comments here. This requester should determine why issue failed and try to recraft proposal to gain broader support. An appeals process will bog down the already taxed council. Another comment said one could come up with a requirement that the GNSR reconsider without new information, but that seems to be a rather cumbersome process. And you cannot force a policy organization to deal with an issue it does not have an interest in dealing with. Thresholds to initiate a PDP are fairly low. Any thoughts on those comments? I think they're pretty much in line with what we've been talking about here.
Jeff, it's Alan. I'll go back on what I said, and I was wrong. In the vote on council, it says if a supermajority is not reached, a clear statement of all positions held by council members. Each statement should clearly indicate reasons underlying for each position and the constituencies that held the position. So there is, in fact, currently a requirement to state why if you're rejecting. That's the way I read that line.
Is that rejecting? I don't think that doesn't apply to rejecting a PDP. I think that's rejecting a report or a.
No. This is at. You're right. I'm sorry. You're right. On the final outcome, not initiating the PDP.
Right.
You're correct.
But there is a
precedent.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions on that? I know I'm trying to go through quick because I want to get through some more of this and then go back to stage three. So at what point of the process is chartering? At what point of the process should the charter be developed and by whom? And I just also the caveat here that the working group work team has issued a report. Marika, it's not out publicly yet, it's just out for the work team?
They have finalized a first draft where there's some sections that still need completion. It's viewable on their wiki.
Okay. Where they talk about... what should be within a charter, and they talk about, I guess that's their main thing, is what should be in a charter, and I guess the process of coming up with a charter and things like that. But here, this question is more, at what point in the process should the charter be developed and whom? And we have a number of comments here. I think everyone put some comments in, which is that council liaison should be the person to communicate changes to the GNSO. GNSO council approve of the charter or a working group prior to the working group being constituted. Now, Marika, does that go against what the other work team has recommended? That says a council must approve a charter prior to their working group actually being constituted.
I think that's the assumption on which they're working, that you might have a drafting team of some kind that is, or the chartering organization that's developing the charter. But, I think the assumption is that the working group is only formed once the charter has been approved.
Okay, but they are talking about the creation of another group called the chartering organization that's tasked with writing this.
Yes, they refer, as it is applying to, you know, working groups across the GNSO, I guess in most instances it will be the GNSO that is the chartering organization, but it might be here as well, for example, the PPSC that is a chartering organization for the PDP.
And did they give any opinion on whether the council should vote on initiating a PDP before the chartering organization creates a charter? Or do they not even touch that?
They don't even touch that.
Because here I think we have some conflicting comments. At least I'm reading them to be a little bit conflicting, and that's some people are saying that the charter needs to be created prior to council even voting whether to initiate a PDP, and others seem to be saying well, the council should vote on the PDP, and then a chartering organization should be tasked with coming up with the charter. So there's kind of two different comments here. We need to get the feeling as to what most people expect. Because remember, we're talking before we said that the council should vote on initiating a PDP within two meetings, unless there's some, you know, we talked about that whole thing. So does that conflict as well? How do you get a charting organization up drafting a charter prior to when the council has to vote?
As Mike Rodenbaugh, I just don't think you can ask the council to vote until you've got the charter. What would the council be voting on?
Alan, do you want to answer that? Or do you
my recollection, and maybe I'm getting senile, is we normally vote to approve a PDP. If you go back to the formal bylaws rule, we then would vote whether it's a task force or a working group, and we're eliminating that step. And then we come up with the charter. I think that's the order we've always done, at least when I've been around, unless I'm starting to lose it. I don't think
I won't comment on that, Alan. But
well,
no, I think maybe we've done it both ways, because I think definitely we have had drafting teams do the charters before we approve. I guess maybe because we've sort of abandoned the task force notion in the last couple of years and moved exclusively to working groups. But when we have, before we voted to commission those working groups, I believe we've had charters drafted and on the table.
I think the only time we did that was through the domain tasting, and there was a drafting team or a something team formed to decide how to go forward.
Yep.
And the drafting team, of which we were both two parties in, decided to say the way to go forward is to actually start the PDP, and here's a charter de facto. We're putting it in your face.
So,
there was a lot of pushback on that.
The fact
but,
was actually,
but that is what we did, but I don't think it was required by council. I think we just unilaterally did that, and ultimately it succeeded.
So, Mike, if I could just go back a few meetings ago, maybe even a month or so ago, we talked about having council have another vote on the charter, that it could be simultaneous with the vote on, so in other words, it could be on the same vote as to initiate the PDP, so it could be in there, but if it's not, we wanted the flexibility to have the charter come back up to the council, who would vote with the same threshold as it took to initiate that PDP in the first place. So, in other words,
I don't know, to me that's just duplicating effort. It would be easier. I mean, I guess we could debate how the council has done it in the past. It's not so important. How do we want council to do this in the future? Seems to me it would be better if we had a charter at the time we voted on a PDP. But on the other hand, that could very well delay the vote on a PDP. But does it really matter? Because the working group can't start without the charter anyway. So, you know, what's the difference?
So I think we're just preserving the flexibility that they could do it either way. If they want to present it with the motion for the PDP, they can, and it can be voted on at the same time. If they want to develop the charter afterwards, because they just want to put a stake in the ground that they want to do a PDP, then they could submit the charter to the council for a vote, which would be the same threshold as the original initiation of the PDP threshold.
All right. I mean, you know, speaking personally, I really don't like the idea. I think you're just causing two fights, possibly, when you only need one. Also, I don't really understand what it is the council would be voting on if, you know, we're just voting yes or no on whether to initiate a PDP. What does that mean? I mean, to me, the PDP means you're starting a working group, which means the working group has to have a charter. So it seems to me that the charter ought to be agreed at the time we agree whether to go forward with the PDP. That would help really with the scoping issues that we've heard a lot from the R&Rs in response to a couple of the more recent PDPs. That, you know, that essentially the council has lost PDP without a defined scope. Well, the way you define the scope is in the charter.
Well, so Alan's got a comment. I'll just step in and just say I'm not sure you necessarily that without a charter you don't have a scope. I think the issues report is really responsible for defining the scope, and the charter is more responsible for defining how a group would work towards achieving whatever the milestones or whatever the outcomes are. But I'll let Alan jump in if he's got another comment.
Yeah, I guess philosophically I'm at the opposite end from Mike on this one. I think the decision to initiate a PDP is a binary decision, yes, no, and should not involve debate over the words of the charter, which sometimes can go on for a long time. I think council needs a stake in the ground. And, Jeff, in your words, you said they could bring it to council. I'm not quite sure who the they is, because the issues report may have come from out in the left wing from an advisory committee or from the board. Well, not from the board. That doesn't count in this case. And council is making a decision. Do we start on this process or not? And so I'm not sure who the they is who would do this unless council charters a drafting team to draft a hypothetical charter for a working group which may or may not come into existence.
Well, I mean, there could be a group that self-organizes that's behind, so let's say the ALAC was behind the domain tasting PDP, right? So the ALAC could submit a proposed, or a few people of the ALAC could submit a proposed charter that they want council to consider in conjunction with considering the issues report and voting on the PDP.
They could. Of course, someone on the council would have to make that motion because a liaison can't do that. And in fact, you know, the issues report request may have come from another organization that isn't even present on council, even in a liaison position.
Right.
So,
I take your point. I guess I was thinking more of the line of who really wants to initiate it, but. So is there anyone else on the call that wants to address? I mean, Mike is on kind of one end of the spectrum. Alan's on the other. It would be great to hear from some other people that maybe haven't spoken on this. Okay. Hearing none, let me go to trying to see where a good breaking point. Let's just do question 10. Which was, are the elements outlined in the ICANN bylaws relating to the charter still relevant? And we have pretty much either, there's one person that said no, five said yes, and three had no strong view. If you answered no, then what elements should be added, and the time frame should be more realistic? So I'm not sure if the person that said no is only voting on the basis of the time or realistic. Is that still, are the other elements still relevant? I'm not sure what that person would have voted.
I'm not sure what 10 days is. I think there's a time delay, and the only time is 15 days, I think.
There are some, let's see, this is on the charter. I do believe it says 10. You're right. It's either 10 or 15. 10 days to vote on getting the issues report. 15 days to get the issues report. So there is a 10-day time.
Okay. Sorry.
And then additional comments. We have requesting entity should play major role in helping the draft charter. Must be honest regarding whether in or out of scope and any existing data gaps. Can issue be addressed by something other than a PDP? Is to be cross-checking the results of working group team implementation of charter draft and guidelines. Their comment, in addition, the rules should clearly state that the charter may not restrict the types of outcomes. And number four, not entirely sure what elements in the bylaws are referred to in this question. Fair enough. Okay, any other questions on that? And then I kind of want to jump back to number three. Or stage three, because I kind of want to move forward with that as well. Marika?
Yeah, okay. I'm pulling up the other document.
Great. So on the last time, stage three, now we're talking about the work phase, and we've had questions on maximizing the effectiveness of working groups. We've talked about face-to-face meetings. We've talked about communicating with different departments of ICANN staff, including legal, compliance. We've talked about linking the policy development process with ICANN strategic planning and budgeting, and talked about timing with respect to soliciting input from stakeholder groups. I want to jump to, I don't know if we finished covering that issue. So just give me one sec here. Back to my notes. Okay, yeah, I think we covered that. And we were just getting into public comment periods because I think there was a transition because we talked about the stakeholder groups putting comments in. Now we need to talk about the different stages during a work group's work that public comment periods would be introduced. Now, and Marika, help me, keep me honest here. This is, again, not a topic that the working group work team will address because they're really dealing with their internal workings of how they deal with these issues. Or are they supposed to cover this as well?
No. As far as I recall, they haven't done anything on public comments.
Okay.
I would need to check, as I think maybe the OSC, they might have some elements on how to enhance public participation, but I don't think they are specifically looking at public comment periods for PDPs. I think it's more things as the website and how to use those kind of tools to enhance public participation, but not public comment periods as far as I'm aware.
Okay, and let me actually, I'm going to take a little liberty here, and I want to go to question 10, because I think that might help us with the public comment period. And the reason that might help, I think it's 10, it might be actually 9, hold on, sorry. maybe Marika, you can help me find it. In some point here, it talks about that the outputs are, in the bylaws currently it states that there's an initial report and a final report, and those are pretty much the two outcomes. And we can talk about, and that obviously I think has an effect on when there are public comment periods. But
That's question 10.
What's that?
That's indeed question 10, working group output.
Okay, good. So I was right. So if there's an initial, if the only two outcomes or deliverables of a working group are an initial and final report, then it might be easier to talk about when the public comment period would fit into that. But let me ask the more general question, are those the right two outcomes? I mean, should we mandate that in the bylaws, that there must be one initial report and one final report, and that's it? Or should it be more flexible? Should there be other types of reports? I just want to do a sanity check as to whether people believe that those are really the two outcomes. So Marika, you have your hand raised.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that I think what, as it states now, the difference between the initial report and the final report is that the final report incorporates the public comments. But I think what I've seen happening more in practice is that the working group produces an initial report and puts some options on the table that they have been discussing as potential recommendations. They use the public comment period to get some input on those and then continue their deliberations to come up with their final conclusions and recommendations. So there's a bit more difference in practice, I think, what happens between the initial report and the final report as is currently described in the bylaws. So I just wanted to put that on the table.
I think that's an excellent point. And just to add to that, I believe in the current bylaws, it is really not anticipated for a work group to actually do anything after the initial report. Technically, what the bylaws state is that there'll be an initial report, there's public comments, and it's up to the staff to actually collect those comments and incorporate those into the final report. Technically, there is no role for a working group after the initial report. Now, we've never done that. That's not the way it's ever worked in practice. But that is what the bylaws state, and we should consider whether to revise that, and if so, how. So I'll turn it over to Alan.
There's two things. In terms of the work products, I would prefer to see something like a work group must produce one or more interim or draft reports. And I use those words carefully because some of them might just be bullet points of saying where we're going, and some of them might be here are the actual words we plan to publish. We'd like your comment. And if you look at, you know, other processes within ICANN, the external reviews and things like that, is there some way we can fix this line?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, but it seems like it went away.
It seems to have gone away. If you look at the external review process and things like that, there may be one or more reports. Some of them may be in summary form. Some may be, here are the words we plan to publish. You know, speak now or forever, hold your peace. And I think we want to use something like that here. That is, give the working group the flexibility of telling the public where they're going at strategic places. The last one has to be, this is the draft we plan to publish. In general, it would be nice if there was an opportunity for public comment before the words were cast in concrete, because it's always hard to make changes at that point. And I think we need to consider, and I don't know what the right words are, what the process is for integrating public comments. The new agreement signed yesterday makes reference to, you know, that we must provide rationales for why we reject public comments and things like that. On the other hand, you can have a group of 20 people from representing all sorts of voices coming to what they believe is a rational conclusion, and then one person making a public comment. Is the report supposed to change because of that? We really need to define more how this process is going to work, and I'm not sure it's our job, but someone needs to, because we do want input from during the public comment periods, but there has to be a reasonable process for integrating it. And just at the last moment, I think it's the wrong place to start seeking input.
So your words were one or more draft interim, one or more interim or draft reports.
That's correct.
Okay, and then obviously there maybe it's not obvious, but there would be a final report.
Yes.
Right. Sorry, I know it seems obvious, but I just wanted.
Yeah. No. I was focusing on what comes before it, and just
right.
One draft report I do not think is sufficient. But then we also need to talk about the process of how we integrate comments.
Okay. So, James.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time to weigh in on the method for integrating comments, but we adopted something, I think, a little lengthy perhaps, in the FastFox working group that was modeled after the method that ICANN described for integrating comments from the draft applicant guidebooks. So, if and when we come to that point, we can discuss that a little bit further.
Okay, well, let me... James, you want to comment on would you be comfortable if the bylaws were to state something like Alan had said, that there needs to be at least, or there should be one or more interim or draft reports by a working group?
By the way, sorry, it's Alan, the implication was that after each of those there is a public comment period.
Well, I want to separate that, but
okay.
I understand that.
All right, that's what I meant. Sorry to interject.
And this is James. I guess the only issue I would have with that is the or more.
Okay, so can you sorry, I'm just thinking about how to ask this question. So I understand your concern with or more, and probably because you wouldn't want it to go on forever and have all these draft reports.
Right. You know, I wouldn't want it to be an iterative process that essentially just continued to evolve, because I think ultimately what we see in these working groups is that the issue queue will circle back and you will start to revisit old ground again. I think that it is important to have some you know, in my opinion, and I think I brought this up, Marika and Paul can maybe help me here, I think I brought this up in the IRTP-B working group when we were transitioning from IRTP-A to IRTP-B, the idea that trying to get additional issues moved up into IRTP-B because the true delay or the time consumptive issues or processes in a PDP are sending things out for public comment and then having them come back and then and really doing justice to analyzing those public comments and incorporating them in their report or making sure that they're addressed in your report. And I think that if you get yourself into a situation where you're just continuously doing that, you know, PDPs could drag out indefinitely.
So how do you, so Adeline, is there a way to still have, to address your concerns with having only one draft report?
I think one draft report is almost always the wrong answer. I think there should be something which says where what the direction the working group is going in before they issue what could be the final report subject to comments. I just think you want to solicit comments at an earlier stage where there's still opportunity for it to mold the thinking of the group. That's one. And second of all, I think we have to be careful not just to focus on the kind of PDP we've been doing in the last year or so of tight, narrow scopes. If you look at the new GTLD PDP, it's a huge issue. I don't remember how many public comment periods there were, but there were several. And you want several in something in a larger issue because you don't want to just come out with the words from the mountain that are being passed down. So I think council needs to be flexible, and a working group needs to manage their process. If they see they're starting to go in loops, and you know they are on the 10th report, there's something's wrong, and council has to take action at that point if the working group itself doesn't.
So in essence, though, so can we say, and James, can we give that flexibility to the working group, obviously under the supervision of council, but in essence we just say a working group must have at least one draft report where comments are provided and integrated and a final report. And it's essentially up to the working group. And if they're abusing the process or just, you know, getting out of hand with time frames, it really is up to the council to kind of rope them in. Would something like that, Alan, instead of one or more, it's basically saying at least one.
I think those parse to the same thing, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. This is James.
I like my wording more because I think we want to encourage an interim before the draft report, but maybe that's a matter of style.
Sorry, James, you said you agree with what, those saying the same thing, or that would be all right?
I agree that they say the same thing.
Okay, but you're still uncomfortable with that?
Well, I think, you know, Alan has a good point that, you know, we have to trust the working groups to exercise some self-governance and not allow themselves to be... not continuously go back for different reports, but I did raise my hand earlier because of the characterization of we have lots of PDPs with tight narrow scopes. I think that that, my experience, has been the exception. I think that what we see is that the working groups start off with kind of a little bit of wiggle room in the scope, and then they expand as we go along. So I just I wanted to put that up there. Then the other concern or thought I wanted to get on the table was this idea that the timing of the public comments prior to a draft report. And, you know, I'm struggling with this a little bit, Jeff, and maybe you guys can help me here, but it seems like, you know, the first order of business when and maybe this is built into the PDP and I'm just not understanding it, but it seems like they're soliciting public input into a PDP very, very early in the process. Even before, in my opinion, before the working group has necessarily done any material work on the issue. So I, if that's by design, then I'll just go and re-educate myself a little bit and get a little smarter on this process. But it seems that if you've already had the issues report released for comment, and you know there's probably some deliberations or discussions on the council, it seems like to then charter a group so that they can issue a public comment period right away. It just seems very duplicative in my mind.
So we did talk about on the last call, in number four, if you scroll up to number four, we did talk about keeping, it seemed like it was the group had still wanted to keep the initial comment period when the working group is formed to give the working group some guidance on the work that they're doing leading up to a draft report. No, I don't think anyone suggested that we get rid of that. So we still have that comment period built in when you start the working group. Then the question is, do we leave, or Alan's recommendation is that the working group should have the flexibility to have one or more draft reports to solicit public opinion or comments, sorry, on you know the direction the group is heading. Maybe the working group is going to solicit input on what proposed recommendations are, or the working group puts out a draft report with its recommendations in order to get comments on its recommendations. So it seems like I think that's an option that we should leave open or flexible, according to Alan, so we can get that more public input. So
Jeff, I have my hand up in Adobe Connect.
Okay.
I'll wait for my music to finish.
You rap to it, though? All right, Marika?
Yeah, no, because I just wanted to point out, like, a point that that James already raised as well, because to Alan's point, saying that he wants to, you know, get in there and to mold the thinking of the working group, I think that's part of the role of the comment period that you have in the beginning when the PDP starts. And also wanted to point out there's nothing preventing a working group to put out a certain issue or question or proposed work approach for public comment. Just because it's not mandated in the bylaws doesn't mean that a working group cannot go out and do that. I would have a certain concern as well if you would put, you know, if I, for example, look at the Fast Flux report, if we would have put out every next version, you know, with changes in there out for public comments, you know, we would have been working on it for I don't know how many years. So I would have a concern if you have too many versions and who decides, you know, what changes warrant another public comment period, that you might run into a situation where you have a lot of public comments, review of public comments, integrating again a new public comment period. So I would like to caution for that approach and just point out that working groups do have the flexibility to put out specific questions, you know, apart from mandated public comment periods.
Jeff, can I get back in?
Yes. Yes.
I don't think we're saying something very different. We know that working groups always have the flexibility of putting out any sort of interim report and calling for public comments. I was just trying to introduce something into this, into the process, which reminds people that they don't just have to draft a report in isolation ever since the first public comment period and then suddenly get a barrage. There are options. I don't think anyone's requiring that every version be subject to public comments or any version of its deliberations be subject to public comments until the draft. Just reminding people that there are options.
I think you asked a question, Marika. Who makes the? I see it on the chat. Who makes the determination as to when something's final? I think you kind of have to trust a working group to do that. And again, the working group's got a liaison to the council. The council should be monitoring that. If the working group just takes too many drafts, so I understand your caution. I think it's right to have that caution, but is that something we need to predefine? I mean, I do think I kind of agree with Alan in the sense that I think the bylaws are currently a little restrictive, basically saying you have a draft report that goes out for public comment, and it doesn't really allow for anything else, although we've I heard the statement that you could always put something out for public comment. Actually, the bylaws don't really allow that. They don't disallow it. They don't allow it either. And so one, in theory, could make an objection because that's not in the bylaws. So it probably should be something we codify, that the working group has the flexibility to seek additional public comment periods on a report or individual questions that they may have.
I could support that. I think we're going to be subject to public scrutiny a lot more than we have been in the past. And I think we need to be.
Mark, is there
how we do this.
I think you're right, Alan. I think, Merck, is there anything else that we could put in here to give some comfort? I mean, you've raised some legitimate concerns, and I don't want to dismiss those, but is there something we could put in? Or
I think the point you made of at least one, I mean, I find that a little bit more reassuring than the one or more, where you're assuming more that there are going to be more versions. And, you know, it might mean the same thing in practice, because, of course, you can still have more versions in both options. But at least one, I think, opens that door, but also says, like, well, at least one, so you can just have one and, you know, leave it up to the working group to decide if more is needed. And indeed, with an added clarification, maybe in the context of public comment, saying that, well, these are the mandated ones, but if a working group, you know, deems it appropriate or necessary in order to conduct their deliberations, you know, they can decide to, you know, have an additional public comment on a specific question or issue or, you know, whatever. Maybe that addresses that.
Marik, would you be happy with saying one, saying at least one interim or draft, or would you just use the word draft?
I don't have a specific opinion on that. I mean, to me, both sounds as the same. But that might be me as a non-native English speaker, so.
I guess I'm differentiating, but it may be my own invention. The implication is a draft really is something very close to the final, whereas I was using the term interim as something much earlier in the process.
Yeah, I mean, we could, if well, let me see if anyone objects to that. I mean, I think you're right, Alan. I think draft has a specific connotation that's more final than an interim. Is anyone uncomfortable if we change the term from draft to interim? Hearing none. You know, so here's another concept that I kind of wanted to introduce, is that a lot of times there needs to be a document that goes out that has the recommendations, that has initial recommendations of the working group. What's happened in the past, and this is in the long past, so maybe things have gotten a lot better, or things definitely have gotten better in the last few years. But what used to happen was that the working group would define issues, put it out for comment, then all of a sudden they would include their recommendations in a final report. And the recommendations never really went out for comment until after the report was deemed final, and then the board, you know, or the board may put that out for comment for the first time if it went straight up. This happened, I'm trying to remember which PDPs this was. This goes back a while, so I can't remember which ones they were now. Do we want to make it clear that the recommendations of the group need to be included in those interim reports to get comments on it?
Well, it's Alan. I would have thought that one of the concepts of an interim report is it might not have recommendations, but it may be simply reporting where the working group is.
So under that though, if a report is final, technically it means it doesn't go out for comment after that, unless the GNSO wants to put it out for comment, or they might. But then it's away from the working group, right? The working group's technically done in theory.
Yep.
So my concern has always been, as an individual, has always been that if you don't see the recommendations, there may not be an opportunity for you to comment on it and it, for it to be changed on those recommendations, for it to be changed prior to going to the council. Because the council is voting on really the final report, or whether to send it, you know, it's voting yes or no to the final report or sending it back.
Well, I don't understand the concept of a draft report which doesn't have the recommendations. I mean, when it comes down to it, that's the report. The rest is background as to why you reached those conclusions. So I would assume the term draft report has to include conclusions or it's not a draft report.
Well, you've now changed it to interim report.
No, that's why I had said interim and one or more interim or draft. I think there needs to be a final draft report showing the conclusions, showing the recommendations, subject to change from the comment period. I was claiming there may be a need for an earlier one, which is not in that level of detail or format.
Okay, so I think you're saying something different than what I interpreted, which is fine.
Okay.
Which is good. So you're saying there should be a draft report, but there may be additional interim reports prior to the publishing of a draft report.
Interim or draft. I mean, it depends on the what the group is thinking at that point. I could live with interim without the word draft and for the earlier ones, yes.
Because I think in that way we can distinguish it, whereas a draft report is one that has recommendations that go out for public comment. An interim report may or may not have recommendations.
Okay, so you're saying there must be a draft report, which implicitly includes comments or maybe explicitly or recommendations or maybe explicitly, and there may be prior interim reports.
Correct. That's.
I thought that's what I was saying originally, but I'm certainly happy with that wording. Others may not be.
Anybody have thoughts on that? Marika, so I think the way I'm distinguishing between an interim and a draft report, we might come up with different names if that makes it easier, but what we're saying is that a draft report would actually have recommendations that go out for public comment before there's a final report, whereas an interim report may be questions that go out, maybe may contain recommendations, just testing the waters, but does not necessarily have to. So it could be, in theory, like, let me give an analogy to our group. Although we've been calling our things draft reports, perhaps on each stage, they're really interim reports. We're going to combine them at some point into a draft report. That draft report will need to go out for public comment, but if we felt like it, we could send any of these individual stage reports out for comment if we felt like it. We would have that flexibility.
I think that's a fair analogy.
Does that make sense, Marika?
I don't know if Marika's on. She may have just gotten dropped.
Oh, okay.
I'm back again, but I didn't hear what was just said. Sorry,
okay.
I disconnected.
So I was creating an analogy. We were talking between interim and draft reports, and I think what I had said was that in my mind, I'm distinguishing between an interim and a draft report, where a draft report has recommendations of the work group that goes out for public comment, and then the final report is what incorporates those public comments, may change the recommendations, basically it could do anything with those, essentially to incorporate the public comments. Whereas an interim report may contain recommendations but does not necessarily have to. It may also be an issue that you want to throw out in the interim to get some public comment on without having any recommendations. It could be a survey. It could be essentially anything that the group wants to put out for public comment. And the way I've kind of distinguished it is that in theory, PDP work team output, we have divided our work into six stages. In theory, we've developed interim reports of each stage, or we will have developed interim reports of each stage. We could, at our own discretion, put each of those individual reports, interim reports, out for public comment if we felt like it, or we could just go to a combined draft report and put that out for public comment. The draft report would have recommendations.
This is Marika. Because one comment to make is that, for example, in the Fast Flux Working Group, they didn't put out any recommendations in the initial report. They put out some ideas for consideration where they wanted public comments on. So they didn't feel restricted by the fact that it was called, well, not an interim, but an initial report, to just put some ideas out there and work from those to develop recommendations.
And did they put those recommendations out for public comment, or did it go straight to a final report?
I went straight to a final report, but, you know, they took the initial ideas and, you know, tweaked them a bit and ordered them a bit, because there wasn't that much feedback specifically on that. So, you know, they left them, you know, they made some changes, but not a whole lot. It wasn't something that they came in up with completely different recommendations than what they had been talking about.
Right, but had they put those recommendations out for public comment, it may not have been different. So I guess my question is, there have been some groups in the past that have operated that way, that have just thrown a report together without recommendations, put it out for public comment, then developed recommendations and put them into a final report. Whereas I think what Alan is saying, and kind of how, at least in a personal capacity, I feel, is that the recommendations themselves should go out for public comment before you could call a report final, which is a different philosophy than what's been going on in some groups.
Because then you basically would have a public comment period just before releasing the final report. So your idea would be to have an initial report that, you know, might or might not have recommendations, but once the group then deliberates and might make changes to those recommendations, then have like a kind of final call before they call it final? Is that what you're suggesting?
I think it's that there does not necessarily need to be an interim report that goes out. There may or may not be. That's at the discretion of the work group. Or the working group, that may or may not contain recommendations. It could contain whatever you want, right, whatever the working group wants. But at some point there needs to be a draft report, and that draft report should contain recommendations of the work group. That must go out for public comment.
So what is the difference then with what is called currently the initial? What does that mean for you? Is that more as the interim or as the draft or somewhere in between?
Well, what the council has been doing with initial reports is kind of not really consistent. It hasn't been consistent. Some have contained recommendations, some have not. So I think what we're saying is that you must have a draft report, at least a draft report that goes out for public comment that contains the recommendations of the group. You may have additional interim reports prior to the draft report that go out for public comment just for any reason that the working group deems appropriate.
So how do you deal then with the group puts out the recommendations for public comment and they make changes to them based on those public comments? Should they then go out again?
Oh, that would go on forever.
Yeah, that's why I'm confused. When do you then draw the line and say, okay, you know, the group has made changes, you know, based on either their discussions or new information? When do you say, okay, even though there are things different than when the report was put out for public comments, you know, this is now final and no more public comments?
I would answer that question. I would say that it's up to the working group to declare it final. I do think there should be some flexibility. If because of the public comment period they get some really persuasive comments that dramatically changes the recommendations in a material manner, then that probably should go out for public comment again. But if the changes are more of a minor nature to clarify or to then I think you're right. It shouldn't go out for public comment. But that's personal opinion. I think it's up to the working group. I think that if you're going to dramatically change something, then it should probably go out again. But let me turn over to James and then Alan.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks. It's James. And I'm just naive enough or possibly arrogant enough to think I might have a way out of this. And that is to define four types of reports that can come out of a working group and be subjected to public comment. First would be an initial report that is put out before the working group does any work at all and is meant to kind of set the path on the charter questions and frame the deliberations on the group. The second being an interim report which may or may not have initial recommendations for the group. The third being a draft final report, which contains the recommendations and is at the end of the process and is essentially gives the public comment an opportunity to weigh in prior to the working group concluding, and then the last report being, of course, the final report. Now, that said, I don't believe that every working group or PVP needs four reports, and I think that perhaps they could look for opportunities to combine attributes of those different reports or determine whether or not one is even necessary or warranted, you know, based on the situation on the ground. But I'm just trying to make a distinction based on some of the working groups that I've participated on, some that have been, I think, very successful, some that I think that have dragged out, and trying to pick and choose the better elements of that.
So you said, but are you saying, just to clarify, that the last two, the draft final and the final, would actually be required? The other two can be combined. There's flexibility with those two.
Would be optional and would not necessarily need to have both. You could combine them.
Let me go to Alan.
Yeah, just to comment on what James said first. I would assume, though, that for the interim one and the draft final, there could be more than one version. As Jeff, as you pointed out, if the comments result in a substantive enough change to the draft final, you may want to go for another iteration. Now, that's not saying you have to, but the working group should have that discretion. But
yes, it's possible, yes.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to one of our basic principles. We're saying the council is now not the body creating crafting policy, but is a management body. And I think we're talking about council taking responsibility for that part of its life. If, for instance, a draft report or a final report comes out from the working group and council looks at that and says, you didn't factor in all of those comments, you didn't rationalize why you ignored them, we're remanding it back to the working group. I mean, normally working group is dissolved when council thanks them for their good work and moves on. So one can imagine these processes changing because council is taking its management role seriously and saying, you know, we don't have a defendable position. And as I said, I think we're going to become more answerable in these things, not less, partly due to the dissatisfaction in the last couple of years of how public comments have been ignored very clearly in some cases, and simply because of the new contractual arrangements, I think are going to force it more. People are going to be watching more. So council may well remand things back to a working group and say, go do it again, because you didn't justify why you ignored all those comments. So I think the process has to be inherently somewhat flexible. I mean, what James is suggesting, I can live with. I think it's a bit too much a level of micromanaging, but I can certainly live with it.
Okay. So let me ask, to continue this topic, and before we close up the call, how much time should you give the public to comment? I think this is there's been anywhere between 21 and 30 days. Sometimes it's been extended. What are your thoughts on that? So when you do put out any one of these things for comment, maybe it depends. Maybe if it's an interim report, you provide less, or if it's a draft final. But what are the thoughts about how long the public should have to comment?
I like the words typically and give discretion. You know, for instance, I would like to see a formal rule in ICANN saying comment periods are halted during ICANN meetings. I think it's ludicrous when we have comment periods expiring or starting during ICANN meetings, which are not really times that many of the interested participants can act on them.
And this is James. I agree with that. I think that, you know, leaving some flexibility, but the time during ICANN meetings should be considered to, you know, exist in some sort of a parallel dimension where there is no calendar, because you know, having things coming due during an ICANN meeting or having things starting up during an ICANN meeting shouldn't count into the time.
So if we just state then typically should last 30 days, but we recommend those time periods may be extended if the comment period falls during a regularly scheduled ICANN meeting?
I would say that they can be extended at any time based on if there's sufficient requests from the community to do so. But that as a general rule, comment periods should not be opened or closed on dates that are during the week of a posted general ICANN meeting.
That should be a rule for ICANN, not just PDPs.
That should be a rule for pretty much most business that isn't central to the ICANN meeting.
Okay, I think I've got notes on that. Marika, you good on all that?
Just one quick comment. I'll point out that rule cannot always apply. For instance, budgets that are voted, the ICANN budget is voted on the last day of an ICANN meeting, and I would not want to see the last 5 days one isn't allowed to comment because it's not really a comment period. So one has to word this carefully.
Okay.
And this is Marika. I think there was already an agreement that I think two ICANN meetings ago where that same comment was made, and I think they did incorporated or was, accepted as the time from ICANN meeting basically counts, in addition to any public comment period that's running.
And then ignored it at the last meeting.
But I think for the PDP, that probably would need to be clarified because there are set timelines. But I guess for some of the other public comment periods, it's more that, indeed ICANN decides whether it's 30 days or 20 days, while some of the PDP public comment periods are prescribed, so that would need to be adjusted.
And Marika, next time we have a chance to talk, I can show you a to-do list of things that are coming due during ICANN meetings. They're not PDP related, so I won't raise them here. But it is a challenge.
Yep. All right, guys. I think we're good. Let's send a doodle around for next week's meeting. I think we can finish stage three at the next meeting and hopefully get a survey on stage three out, so that we can go over that survey in Seoul at the meeting. Hopefully have a draft second stage two report as well out for everyone by Seoul, so that we can say that we're wrapped up with these stages by the end of the Seoul meeting and get into stage four and five after that. All right?
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks,
ICANN staff.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.